Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners, or should we say guten Abend und guten Morgen in honor of the 2024 German Euros. I'm actually quite surprised I can say those German words better than the majority of the English ones I know, but nonetheless, welcome back to everyone. Hopefully the majority of you agreed with the most of our, you know, end of the season report card grades during last week's episode, but don't you worry, just in case you didn't, we do have an episode specifically for you today. Here to potentially combat one of our lower team's report card grades of Manchester United is my dear friend, dare I say it, one of my Champions League caliber top four friends, Brendan Heasley. Brendan, welcome back, man. Happy to have you on the cast. It's been too long. I know you've been itching to get back on here ever since the Erik ten Hag in and out conversation has kind of been started. Sometimes I was worried for your mental health and sanity during the season, but nonetheless, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a long time. I think the last time I was on was at the beginning of the season, and it's been a long season, especially for United fans, as you guys so delicately put in your end of season review. Might have a bone to pick with that. But yeah, you know better than anyone my trials and tribulations over the past season. So, you know, can't wait to get into it and defend my team because they need it.
Absolutely. You will definitely have that opportunity. And we kind of painted that picture that way, knowing the following week we would have a Red Devil on the cast. So very excited to hear what you say. I think I know what direction you're going to spin it, and I totally understand, but we'll leave all that imagination to the real conversation further down the road. But as per usual, we'll start off with some hot news. But as you all know, the EPL is still in a lull. They haven't really got into the transfer window quite yet because of the international tournaments that have just started and are just about to start. So we will bring to you what we can regarding hot news. And as always, more likely than not these times of the seasons, it's about coaching. Ironic, since we're also going to have a large segment regarding a certain coach, we have a couple new news for coaching as well. And this is something, Sean, you kind of put up in the agenda here today, but I know we all were talking about it over the past week due to the fact that it is an American-born coach in the EPL again, and that is the Brighton appointment of Fabian Hurzeler as the manager of the Gulls. Wise old gaffer, Sean Larkin, welcome back as always. What do we have about Hurzeler?
We definitely don't have a wise old gaffer. We have a 31-year-old, the youngest manager in Premier League history, Fabian Hurzeler, taking over. Just the fourth American to ever manage permanently in the Premier League. The other guys before him did not do so well. Bob Bradley got fired after 11 matches. David Wagner got Huddersfield relegated. And then, as we know, Jesse Marsh recently was with Leeds United, also got sacked midseason and then ended up in their relegation. So hopefully he'll be able to buck that trend. He takes over after leading FC St. Pauli to the Bundesliga 2 title and promotion to the Bundesliga. He took over last year with them in the relegation zone and has just really dominated from a defensive standpoint and led them all the way to the top league in the German competition. He's known for playing a 3-4-3 formation. Once again, known for deliberate and methodical buildup, kind of like Roberto De Zerbi, but he's known for being a little bit more pragmatic and more compact defensively. So there won't be as many results where Brighton kind of gets blown away and they're not competitive in games. They'll probably be a little bit less free-flowing and high-scoring, but on the bright side, they should be able to get a little bit more or a little bit better defensive performance. He's also known for being very good with young players and being influential in their development, which obviously at a place like Brighton, which has become a talent factory, that's crucial. That's also one of the reasons why De Zerbi left and went to Marseille, is that he wanted more proven big name caliber signings as opposed to, you know, the traditional way that Brighton goes about things. I think one thing that he's also been known for is playing with inverted wingers, which obviously suits guys like Matoma, Adingra, and even and Ciso well in transition. I think those guys should have opportunities to get in behind and get in goal scoring opportunities in areas of the pitch. And then just my final note on him is that he's younger than seven of his current players, and he was 9 years old when James Milner made his Premier League debut back in 2002. So pretty insane stuff. James Milner, the ageless wonder, continues on.
Absolutely. The EPL dinosaur, if we may. And just for the record, Kyle, I know I was actually referring to Sean as the wise old gaffer there. This guy is coming in young, and he's going to be very exciting to watch. I think a very tough role or shoes to fill with De Zerbi now gone. I believe, Sean, he's going to Marseille, right? In Ligue 1, or who is he going to? Yeah.
Yeah, Marseille. Yep.
And it will be interesting to see how he performs. I've also never even heard of St. Pauli. So every time I saw that, I was like, who is this guy coming in? But hey, exciting. He may be, you know, American born, raised in Houston. I'm sorry, born in Houston, raised in Germany, but we'll tag that as an American win right there. Kind of keeping things going on the Brighton manager train, an ex-Brighton manager by the name of Graham Potter has semi been linked with a possible Premier League return with Leicester City. Obviously, Leicester City has regained promotion after 1 year stint down in the Championship, but it is looking like Potter might be the answer to their replacement. So Potter's last time coached was on April 2nd, 2023 for Chelsea. If you remember his 7 month stint with the London Blues, his last game was a 2-0 loss to Villa. And he had a 31 game span with Chelsea. Within that 31 games, if you compare it to Pochettino, who we spoke about last week leaving, he had two less wins and two more draws than Poch, and they both had 11 losses. So ultimately, not much, you know, land or traction was gained or lost with that kind of bridge gap year for Potter. It'll be interesting to see how he returns to the spotlight in a less under the microscope coaching role that would have been his time at Stamford Bridge for Leicester. So it'll be exciting to see what he can do with a similar team in terms of size, in terms of funding, in terms of their actual physical departments, their training grounds, kind of just the same size. We'll see if Chelsea possibly was too big for his bridges, no pun intended, or he's able to kind of do what he did with Brighton in the future there. But without further ado, the reason why we are all here, it is the Manchester United end of the season spotlight, where Brendan will gracefully, chivalrously, and just majestically defend his team to the death, as I know you will. So again, Brendan, welcome back. We are extremely excited to have you on the cast once again. As we mentioned before, I know from our conversations, you've been absolutely dying to vent about this team and point us and point that ship in the proper direction for the next season and beyond. So before we get into the really exciting, juicy Erik ten Hag in versus Erik ten Hag out controversy, why don't you and us get started into the team as a whole? You know, during last week's episode, we mentioned that Kyle, Sean, and myself gave Manchester United our report card grades of a D+, C-, and another C- in that respective order. Is this some tough love from us lads, or what would you have given the Red Devils grade-wise for the season? Who impressed you the most? And what was your biggest disappointment, or who was your biggest disappointment?
It's definitely harsh. Coming from a United fan.
Right off the bat. Nope, you guys were wrong. That's it. Harsh. Very cruel.
I mean, fair.
But I like it.
Yeah, I'm fair. Done. I can leave now. I said what I wanted. I think it comes back to expectations for what United needed in their second season under Ten Hag. The first season ended with a top four finish in Champions League, and they won the Carabao Cup. I don't think anyone expected that. I think he overperformed, and I think in the long run that hurt him because people raised their expectations as if somehow Man United is back after a decade of failing. And I think, again, that hurt Ten Hag. And when you look at this year, he now, after the FA Cup, where he sufficiently whooped Pep tactically. It wasn't a smash and grab. It was a tactical masterclass. They now have Europa League. They're in Europe. So they won a trophy, the FA Cup, the second most prestigious cup in Europe, in England, and they are in Europa League. I think it's unfortunate they finished eighth, but I don't think there was a huge margin between like eighth and sixth. And just the vast amount of injuries United had. I think they had over 45 separate injuries. They had key players out. you know, if you got a couple of those players back, I think you easily get 3-6 points. You pick up 2 extra wins and you're right up there.
So you pick up 2 extra wins and you are in fifth place. You're tied for fifth. So you're right about that margin. There was a 3-point margin between eighth and sixth place.
I don't know, though. I mean, counterpoint here. Some of those players being out definitely helped your team. I mean, Casemiro, Antony, all the all-stars that you guys picked up, you know, them not playing might be the best scenario.
Well, that's a good point. With Casemiro out, we saw Kobe Mainoo. So I think in the long run, that is obviously huge. He looks to be a great player. He is super young, 19, I think. So he's going to make mistakes. But, I mean, he got called up to the England squad for the Euros at 19. So
he played yesterday, right? Or Sunday. Yes, yesterday.
Yeah, he got 15 minutes at the end of the first match for England. You know, so I definitely think the injuries in some aspects were beneficial. I don't necessarily know if you want to go into a season saying, yes, I want injuries to all these players. But I think, you know, now with the benefit of hindsight, you could say, well, you know, it worked out semi-decently. As far as the best player, you could give it to Bruno, Garnacho, Mainoo. Bruno is just the model player of consistency, you know, in terms of just being there, which Ten Hag alluded to yesterday, I think on Dutch TV, saying how important it is to have players available. And Bruno is the poster child for availability. And he, you know, contributes to the team very well. We saw at the end of the season what it was like when he wasn't there and how difficult it was for the team. Garnacho, I mean, I just keep thinking back to that Everton goal he had that got goal of the season. You know, he kind of slumped throughout the season, but he played a ton of minutes, so it's understandable. And then Kobe Mainoo, since he, you know, came on, was just superb. So, and then I guess for the disappointments, I mean, it has to be Rashford. I mean, the guy scored 30 goals the previous season. He had like 8 this season. He wasn't fit. He was petulant at times. You know, the reasons why he wasn't performing. He was lazy, which was my big problem with him. You know, you could see he just wasn't tracking back. I don't know why. You know, Ten Hag needed it. The team needed it. And he just didn't want to do it. So it's, you know, I kind of want him to go because I'm just tired of it. You know, he'll give a good season like 2 years ago, and then he'll give a crap season like this season. And it's just been a cycle now. I think he's been at the club 8 years as a first teamer. I'm just tired of it. So I wish the Arsenal rumors were true. I think he'd be a great addition to Arsenal. I think they could definitely use him. They have the money for him. Please go buy him. But
yeah. I'll give you 2 hay pennies and a nickel.
I'll drive and him
think,
over
I
there.
I think it's worth it.
I'll take it.
That's pretty good. Well, other than finding out that you watched Dutch TV specifically for Erik ten Hag interviews, what would you have letter-wise, and I don't know if I missed that because I was still enamored by the Dutch TV comment, what would you have given Manchester United as a letter grade? Now, again, when Sean, myself, and Kyle come from the position of the report card, I think you made a great point in the beginning that the expectations for Erik ten Hag might have been skewed based off of the season he had beforehand, which you mentioned was overperformed. And to me, I would have to agree with that because I had an skewed envision of Manchester United. I placed them at third place this season before the season started. And that's probably why I gave them the C-plus letter grade. Again, you mentioned the injuries, which is why I kind of redeemed the C plus from like a C or, oh no, I'm sorry, I gave them a C minus, which redeemed them from the D area. So that's kind of where we all had our projections before the season. I overprojected. I know Sean overprojected as well. Kyle, I think he was ready to just put Manchester United in a dumpster regardless. So we can talk about that. But letter grade wise,
I saw it coming.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have no expectations for a game and nothing to hold on to, that's typically when you are stress-free like Erik ten Hag was. But letter grade-wise, Brendan, what would you give him?
I would give him a solid B. I think, you know, an A this season for me would have been a top-4 finish and a trophy. He didn't get top 4, but like we said, the gap wasn't enormous. There were, you know, factors that led into it. He did win a trophy. He won it you know, very well. It wasn't a smash and grab. So I think at the end of the season, it's a B for me. You know, I think, you know, if you're a United fan and you give less than that, you're just looking for a reason to be Ten Hag out, or you just have an agenda against a player or something. I think based on the first season, it has to be a B.
So what would it take? What would it take then for you to give them a C? Because this was like their worst finish ever.
They probably have to lose that trophy. I think the trophy
win actually bumps them a full letter grade.
Yeah, because that you know, an A for me would have been a top four and a trophy. Well, you didn't get top four, but you still got Europa League because of that trophy, and you won the trophy. So it wasn't like, yeah, it was the lowest points, but at the end of the day, you have Europa League, you're in Europe, you got that, you know, financial boost for being in Europe, and you won the trophy. So
I would agree to that. I do agree that getting into Europa is a big deal, and you know, if any other team in the bottom, say 14 clubs had done it, I'd be impressed. But it's just the expectation for Manchester United. I mean, I got friends that don't follow soccer, and they know who Manchester United is. So I think the expectations are just a little bit higher for a team of that historical significance.
Which is hilarious to me because Sir Alex Ferguson retired in 2013. It's been 11 years of like crap performances. Like, and that's what makes me laugh when you hear, you know, people say, well, we're Manchester United. We haven't been for a decade. Like, we've gone through five managers. We have barely won any trophies. Ten Hag actually won two trophies in his first 2 years. Something that hasn't happened in a long time. So I get it. You know, coming off of Sir Alex Ferguson and all the success he had makes you think like, well, why isn't the team performing like this? And there's a lot of reasons, but I mean, it's been 10 years since any sustained success. And I still don't think United are close to competing for the Premier League. And I don't think they're really close to competing to go far in the Champions League when they get there. So I still think it's a work in progress. So, you know, that's just my opinion.
Last thing to wrap that up, and then I'll actually pass it to Sean, and you can kind of take where you want to with the next question or information. But to Brendan's point, which is very, very, very valid, which I don't think anyone really does realize, but since 2013-14 season, in 2013-14, Manchester United finished seventh. In 14-15, fourth place. Next year, fifth, sixth, second, sixth again, third, second, sixth, third, and eighth. So you really haven't had any form of consistency within a top two, top three finish other than that small stretch between 2019 to 2020, those two seasons back to back. So consistency, you know, is kind of off the charts on that one. So a good shout for there. And hopefully this time around, you can have some type of a rebuilding season to get those building blocks down that you need so desperately. And we'll talk about that during our transfer and the Ineos takeover. But Sean, why don't you go ahead and take it from here and we'll keep this train moving.
Yeah, so I just had a quick one. You talked about how you'd like to see Rashford move on. Obviously, Garnacho is a huge piece going forward. Sancho has not kissed and made up with the manager. So I had a question about a guy who didn't play that much this year, but he did show flashes. He scored a couple big goals in Amad Diallo. Is he someone you would like to see more of, or do you think it's a situation where it's better to cash in on him and get someone who's, I guess, a little bit more proven or ready to contribute, you know, big minutes to pair with Garnacho?
I'm not sure if he'll still be at the club after this season. There's rumblings that he'll be, you know, moved on. I think, unfortunately for Diallo, especially this past year, injuries and then that red card after the Liverpool FA Cup game kind of scuppered any consistency he could have. I think he got injured in preseason, and that scuppered the, you know, first part of the season for him. And then breaking into the squad, he had difficulty. He had a couple games towards the end of the season where he looked pretty good, and normally I would keep him, but those Olise rumors from Crystal Palace won't go away. And I think even if you move on Greenwood and Sancho, but you bring in Olise, I still don't know if he has a path to consistent first team minutes. I would like to see it because I think he's more of a creative winger. Not so much that, you know, Olise is, but he's something different than the options United have now, like Rashford, Garnacho. and Anthony are all shoot first, you know, dribble to the goal. They don't look to create opportunities for other players, which, you know, hurts Hoyland a lot, that I don't think people talk about. So I would like to see him play more. I just, if they bring in Alesi, I don't see how he gets any consistent minutes, which is unfortunate because I think he's a good player. And you're right, he's shown, you know, flashes and moments, you know, especially against Liverpool. And he's a good player, but I don't know how he gets into that team when everyone's healthy. And I mean, they can't just give up on Antony. They, unfortunately, and it's not Antony's fault, they spent a lot of money on him. That's more Richard Arnold and John Murter being idiots and waiting all season to be like, oh, we actually do want this guy. I know you said 40 million at the beginning of June, but we're now in September and we're going to do whatever it takes to get him. And apparently it was 80 million pounds. That's what it took to get him. And that's not his fault. I mean, he's not an 80 million pound player. But I mean, some of the stuff he gets is just ridiculous. You know, like Grealish doesn't put up great stats and he was 100 million pounds. I don't see him talked about a whole lot.
But he's likable and he boozes and Antony beats women. So it's just like, you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you're an abuser versus like just some dude who likes to drink way too many beers. I think that genuinely plays a factor.
Well, I mean, alleged any abuse. I don't know. I mean,
oh my.
Listen, I'm not saying he's innocent. Just
when in doubt, assume the Manchester
I'm
United
just saying it's a terrible thing to label someone without it being proven.
You know what? Coming from a team who's about to face like 4 billion charges, I do appreciate the innocent until proven guilty. So I'll ride with you on this one, Brendan. 100%.
Yeah, it's funny what teams back Man City. I think Newcastle's in there, Aston Villa's in there, all those big money clubs. And I think too, the problem with Antony is he does goofy things and that doesn't help. You know, like that face he made coming on as a sub, as if he was like a super sub. I don't know why he does it. I mean, he had moments. I remember the first game he came in against Arsenal. Tess, you might remember this. He scored. And he has, you know, he had a big goal. I think it was against Barcelona last year in the Champions League. He has moments, but I just think it's the expectation of being a player with that price tag. And again, whether or not he committed those allegations, I think that messes with the player. I mean, it could be true, and that's awful. It could also not be true, and that messes with the player. I don't know. I think, you know, it's difficult to say, and it's just unfortunate for him. But, you know, back to Diallo, I would like to see Diallo play. I don't know if he'll be here next year, but I think he offers something different than the wingers United currently have.
Which is fair. Very fair. All right, well, going from a couple players that we like to see stay or go or give a little bit more slack, I think one person in particular has been on that fence for way too long, and I think kind of in an unjustified way or unjustified way and not treated exactly the most, I guess, professional towards the end of the season here, and that is Erik ten Hag. He is obviously staying. They're actually even talking about contract extensions. So I'm curious because I believe that you're an Erik ten Hag in kind of guy. So I'm very curious to see what your feelings about this. You're happy, you're sad, you're indifferent about it. Take us through kind of why you feel that this is the correct move for Manchester United as a whole. How you can defend Erik ten Hag after the season that Kyle's mentioned before, eighth place, worst finish in Manchester United history. Kyle mentioned last episode a great stat that I don't think as far as we have been on this planet, we have really seen a negative goal differential for Manchester United. So take us through the process. I know coming from a team that finished in eighth place 1 year, got a new coach, brand new out of nowhere. The words "trust the process" were stapled across everyone's foreheads. Is this "trust the process" for Erik ten Hag, and he just happened to start off too good, and then now he's back to where he probably should be, and now we have to develop? Where's your head at with ETH?
Oh, well, I'm really happy he stayed. I think it would have been disgusting if he got the sack. I think it was awful the way it was handled, how it leaked out the day before the FA Cup final. And then Ineos tried to say, oh, that's awful. It's like, well, you're talking to the other man. You know it's going to come out. Like, you can't now say, oh, that's terrible, because you're the one doing it. You know, I think that, and the conspiracy theory is like, oh, well, they leaked it out because they wanted the team to, you know, down tools and then perform badly. Then he gets, you know, the final nail in the coffin. He gets sacked. Players in this team have sacked many a managers, and it's not inconceivable to think that they would have down tools again. Surprisingly, they didn't. The end of the season actually ended pretty well. They beat Newcastle 3-2. They beat Brighton 2-0, and then they beat Man City 2-1. I think it's difficult, especially for, you know, the season United had, to go on a 3-game run of winning. And it's just, and the managers he was linked, they were linked to. I mean, are they really an upgrade over Ten Hag? The only one I would have even like been semi open to was McKenna from Ipswich, just because he's an up and coming manager. He doesn't have ties to any other Premier League club, you know, in terms of he's managed them before. Like, I don't want used goods from Tuchel or Poch. That's not exciting to me. You know, I don't want someone else's dirty laundry. And I just, we're 2 years into a project, and I don't think the project was worth giving up on. They had a successful first season. Second season, you know, we all know wasn't as good as it should have been. But the players he's brought through, such as Garnacho, Manu, the players that are coming up through the academy, they have a, you know, a handful of players, you know, Toby Collier, Harry Amass, Shea Lacey. There's, you know, a handful of others that are really exciting. And Ten Hag is a developer of youth. And I think he's shown that. He's improved players, just DeLow, who's been a senior first team player. And I just think giving up on him for Poch or Tuchel or you know, anyone else they were linked to just wasn't worth it. And it would have been a huge step back for Ineos. You know, a lot of fans, I think, wanted a full sale, and they didn't get that. Ineos kept working the corner, and finally the Glazers slowed down that car enough to be like, I like that, get in the car, we're going back to my place. they went from, oh, we're gonna do a 100% takeover, like Qatar supposedly was as well, then they went, well, we'll do a majority, mm-hmm. we'll go 51, and then they settled for 25%, and it's not what the fans wanted, I think. And you know, we don't know the terms of that agreement. There was supposedly during the whole phase that, you know, there'd be opportunities for Ineos to increase their shares in the club. I haven't heard anything about that. I don't know. I mean, there was a report from Simon Stone 2 weeks ago saying that Joel Glazer and Jim Ratcliffe are heading up the end of season review. What is Joel Glazer doing in there? We were told that Ineos is doing the footballing side. Why is Joel Glazer sitting down at the table being like, I'm going to look this over? You know, I think it's just, it would have been awful to sack him. The overwhelming majority of fans wanted him to stay. I think in the end, they came to the right decision. I think it took too long. I think it was disgusting the way they did it. I mean, Ten Hag also said in that Dutch interview that they didn't talk to him for 2 weeks. He didn't know what was going on for 2 weeks. He went on holiday, and then I guess they called him and then showed up at his vacation spot and was like, let's talk this out. And he was like, boy, they ruined my vacation. And he said that tongue in cheek. You know, but now yeah. I think, you know, as you alluded to, they're looking at giving him a new contract. I think they have to. They'll look like idiots if they don't. And I think, unfortunately, it probably strengthened his position in those negotiations for a new contract, because Ineos want what Brighton have. They want basically the manager to be a head coach, and you are kind of given the players you're given, and the players are sold, and you don't have much of an input. And I think the way this has played out, I mean, Ten Hag is going to get an input. Whether that's just a veto or he gets a say at the table, he's going to get that. And I think, you know, we talk about Ineos being slow. They took 2 weeks to make this decision. But also who they brought in too, Barada from Man City. I mean, great. That came out of nowhere. I think it's a great appointment. But he's not coming in till the middle of June or July, the middle of July. I mean, that's like halfway through the transfer window. Like, you know, and even Dan Ashworth from Newcastle, what a mess that is. I think the only one yeah. happy in that is his wife, because she knows for a fact he's not cheating on her, because he has text messages or emails like from his Newcastle account to Manchester United. Like, hide it a little better, man.
And
then they brought in Wilcox as like the technical sporting director, which reminds me, a stupid article where they said, oh, part of the reason they changed their mind on Ten Hag was that he took Wilcox's suggestion to play Rashford as a false nine. And I was like, well, he's done that before. Like, that's not brand new. Like, he was doing that in his first season. Like, that has nothing to do with Wilcox. Like, he's done that before.
Not reinventing the wheel here.
No. Yeah. And I think it was just, you know, scuttlebutt. But, you know, when you look at how Ten Hag has developed the young players, I mean, we don't talk about it with Højlund either. He scored 16 goals in a crap United side that doesn't give any service. You know, there's very few young strikers. If I'm building a team, I would want other than Højlund. Maybe Sesko, but that's, I think, recency bias, you know, with the Euros and all that. But if you're talking about a young striker, 20 years old, I mean, he has it all. He has the speed, the power, the shot. You know, I don't think, you know, there's a younger striker that I would want other than him. When you look at Garnacho,
Yeah, he fits the profile. I think that's the modern day striker that everyone's trying to find, like you mentioned, Sesko, to kind of fit the mold that is Erling Haaland. You know, that someone that's going to come in with the raw talent and then can get molded. You know, and I think getting back to the coaches side of things, I think you're right that a lot of the coaching that was out there is not Manchester United caliber when you go through the list, and the grass is on greener on the other side. You know, Erik ten Hag has the experience of being around for long enough that he knows how Manchester United operates. He knows how to maybe get away with a few things more. But, you know, just to inform everyone what was going on, you know, conversations were being held with a lot of different coaches. You mentioned Kieran McKenna from Ipswich. He was previously, I believe, on some form of Manchester United coaching staff, but he hasn't had any experience as the main guy.
In the youth academy.
Yeah, so he hasn't had any real experience at the helm of a major club before. Roberto De Zerbi, I thought, would have been a good replacement just because of his skill as a coach to probably get any team to perform, provided they have some raw talent. Thomas Frank of Brentford, I think he came in and impressed a lot with Brentford because there was a team that came from nothing to came to something, but obviously the Bees haven't been doing relatively well. Marco Silva, I know, Sean, you're a fan of him over at Fulham, was in the conversation. Pochettino was used goods, like you said, over at Chelsea. And then, of course, the last straw that saved Erik ten Hag's back was Thomas Tuchel, who just didn't want to get into another mess of a system. So Sean, I'm curious, and I'll pass over to you again to see what further questions you want to ask, but coaching wise, if you have anything to put in here or move on to the next.
No, I think I agree with Brendan. I think the big thing for me and why it made sense to keep Ten Hag was kind of like you alluded to, Brendan. Just there's not a lot of quality managers that you would get excited about as a fan to, you know, to take over it and take the helm. So I just want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, though. You did talk about the extension. So basically, he has 12 months left on his deal. There's also an option to extend beyond that. And my counter argument to why I wouldn't extend him right now is, would you say Manchester United are closer to winning the Premier League title than the day he walked through the door?
Yeah, I think it's a low bar in terms of improvement from where they were to now. But they definitely improved. And I think, you know, ironically and supposedly in these rumors on a new contract, he wants in writing that the club will go out there and sign players. I know we like to say that United, well, Ten Hag has a lot of money spent. This isn't FIFA. He's not sitting in the negotiation room across from like Ancelotti being like, oh yes, I will pay $70 million for Casemiro. He doesn't do that, you know? So when they label him as, oh, he spent this much money, it's not him. He says, I want these players. And then Tweedledee and Tweedledum from United go out there and, you know, get it done sometimes. You know, and he alluded to as well in some of his interviews saying that, you know, he doesn't negotiate the fees, but they had agreements for other players, better players. I mean, we all know the, you know, saga with Frankie de Jong. I can't tell you how many times Arnold and Murta went out to Barcelona. I don't know if they got like a vacation home there, but they were going out there constantly and they came back with nothing.
I mean, that's Tweedledee and Tweedledum though. Like if the player says he doesn't want to come to the team, why waste your energy and resources on something like that, though, right? Like, you know, Erik ten Hag can say what he wants to bring in a player, but unless it's actually realistic, is it worth the effort?
Well, I think the problem with De Jong is that he was owed a ton of money from Barcelona when they had their financial problems, and Man United correctly were like, we're not paying
that.
De Jong was like, I want it. And Barcelona was like, well, we don't want to pay it. So you're right, they should have just left. But it was like, I don't know what's going on here.
That's a tricky situation.
And I think that's why at the end of the summer, you saw them panic and buy Casemiro, was they got caught with their pants down and they didn't know what to do. And Ten Hag was like, I started a season. I don't have time to go look at, you know, five other players. This is just get me whatever. You know, so I think,
for not for nothing, in the beginning of the season when he did come in, it looked like a great signing for Casemiro. Yeah. Obviously, longevity wise, I think they probably oversold what they were paying him and how long the contract was. What was it, a 3-year or 2-year contract? It was 2 option to extend or 3 option to extend
for Casemiro.
Yeah,
I think it was a 4-year contract.
It was 4-year.
There's no way it was a 2-year contract. I think he still has at least 2 more years on his contract.
At the age of 32, at the time of purchasing, he was what, 30?
Yeah, he was 30 or 31. But I mean, we saw that again, the January transfer window, they brought in Wout Weghorst and Sabitzer the first year on loans. Great help that was. And then this year, they actually sent a player back. We lost a player. We didn't get anyone. We sent Reguilon back and we didn't have a left back for the rest of the season. So I think in some aspects,
you want him anyway. He was an ex-Spurs.
It was a body. I would have taken. It was a warm body. you know, but you know, in a lot of ways, he was let down. And I think we found out Christmas Day or Christmas Eve that Ineos would be partaking in the club, and then in February, when they started their review that lasted months. No one spoke out to defend Ten Hag when things got rough. He handled it all on his own. And that was supposedly a reason that they found or something they found admirable to keep him, which I was kind of like, well, you kind of screwed him over. Yeah, he could have said a lot, but he didn't. And I think if you don't give him a contract extension, as soon as things get rough, the players will down tools and then sack another manager. I think you have to give him an extension. You know, whether that's a 2-year extension, it doesn't have to be a crazy extension. Just you have to give him something at the end of all.
You got to buy into it. Yeah. You got to buy into it. Yeah. So this is the direction we're going. Get behind it or cry somewhere else.
Yeah. In Sancho's case, he needs to go cry somewhere else.
Yeah. But that's so hard. That's such a hard. I mean, you talk about a slight, what the fuck is Marcus, whatever his name is, Slabisser. Thank you. From Dortmund, and now he actually played relatively well on I think it was against
France,
Austria today against France.
Yeah,
and he, you know, both of those players on Dortmund in a Champions League final, and both of them performed relatively well. So you got to think maybe it's the environment that they were brought into at the time as well. I mean, Jordan Sancho obviously is a different story, but with your failed transfers or your failed loans, yeah. Wout Weghorst.
Look at Wout. Yeah.
Yep. He did, what was it? Yesterday
look at Weghorst. Right? Every time that Netherlands international duty, he turns into like prime R9.
How, and it might be the conversation for you right now, the next question is, but how do you get the best out of a transfer window? What are you expecting since this takeover for the future? I know you don't have great faith in Tweedledee and Tweedledum, but for this summer specifically, what are you looking forward to, or what needs to happen? And if you bring this person in, like, what type of culture needs to be cradled around said person?
Well, thankfully, Tweedledee and Tweedledum are gone. And from what I heard is Jason Wilcox will be heading up the recruitment this summer until Barada gets in, and supposedly he'll like finish the deals. God only knows when Ashworth will get in. Could be never. He could be stuck on gardening leave forever. In terms of expectations, it's their first window. They need to get it right. In terms of what that is, I think I have lofty expectations. They need a right back, a left back, two center backs, two midfielders, a striker, and a winger. That's eight players.
So not much.
So
not
an
much
entire at all, team. Is what
you're just saying. A little bit. Just like the icing on top.
And you have what? I think I heard around, and this is just pure, right? You're going to have a lot of sales, but around $50 to $40 million in budget is what I'm hearing coming from the Manchester United camp. Obviously, because I have a hotline straight to the Manchester United camp. This is coming from reports that I'm reading and listening to. But that's kind of the volume that you guys are potentially working with. How do you get the most out of that?
You know, I thought you like snuck into the bathroom and just sat in a vacant stall until someone came in and started talking about it. So I'm relieved to hear that that's not the case.
It was the hole in the roof. I propelled down from the hole in the roof. It was very easy access.
You're painting quite the picture. I think the 50 million is a tactic. I think United have been taken advantage for a lot. In fact, I know it's not 50 million because they're bidding for Jared Brathwaite. And it's, rumored to be 50 million plus add-ons, which I think is a fair price. And I know there's not a lot of Everton fans, but I do know of one. And supposedly Brathwaite is a good player. I don't know. I don't watch Everton. A lot of people don't. But I'll take his word. I'll take his word that he's a good player. I would like him at United. But I know that it's not as low as 50 million. They're, like I said, they're looking at Brathwaite. They're looking at other deals concurrently, which is new for United, because before we couldn't tie our left shoe and put on our right shoe at the same time. It had to be one by one. And I think outgoings will help. You know, they let Varane go, which I don't agree with. And that supposedly was not a Ten Hag decision, but he was on a lot of money and they saved like 12 million a year in wages letting him go. I think with Sancho, if they can let him go for like 40 million, that would be a plus because supposedly he's on £300,000 a week, which is a lot of money. That's another like 10 to 12 million off the books. Same thing with Greenwood. He's pure profit. He's an academy player. If you can get 30 or 40 million, that's like straight in the pocket. You don't have to worry about anything with that. So I think some of the larger, like whether we get four players versus six players, I think it's dependent on sales. I think they will get at least one center back. They'll get Brathwaite or another one, and then they'll get Tadebo because Ineos own Nice, and it would be criminal if they don't get Tadebo because Ten Hag wants Tadebo. He said last summer if Maguire left, that would be the center back he brought in. So he wants Tadebo. Ineos like Tadebo. That is like a slam dunk. If they mess that up, I don't know what happened. There's been rumors to like Frimpong. I would like him. I think he has a release clause around like £40 million, something like that. I think that's doable. Obviously, Elise, £60 million, I think, is his release clause. If it's for like a Champions League team, I think that's the caveat.
Correct.
Which I don't know why Chelsea's looking at him. They're in the Conference League. I don't know what team to play him at. So I don't know why he would want to go there. He's supposedly a United fan too. I don't know if I believe that, but why would you want to play in the Conference League? And in terms of strikers, supposedly they had the money ready for Sesko if he was willing to move. That's what they said. They had the money if they want him, and he was around like £60 million. So they have the money. I just don't know how they're going to spend it and what's the like order of importance. Obviously a center back is top of the list because they're going for Brathwaite, and Everton, for being in financial distress, I don't think have the ability to say, swivel on it. I think at the end of the day, they'll have to take £50 million plus add-ons or 45 plus add-ons. And then
if you just wait till June 30th, you might be able to it. We talked about last week. That's going to be the first window essentially for profit and sustainability rules to actually have a report. So Everton are going to have to make a move before then.
Well, I don't know if as an Arsenal fan, you would know this. Supposedly Onana from Everton is linked to Arsenal.
It's Arsenal, correct.
We were
actually looking at him over the winter window over last season as well.
Yeah, I think he's overrated, but that's besides the point. I wouldn't take him. If there was a midfielder, I would love Yao Neves. I think he would be great. I think Ineos need like a statement signing. The rumor was that would be Olise. I don't think they get him. I don't think they do.
Yeah.
I think they would go for a player named Douay, who plays for Rennes in League One. He's really young. He has a high ceiling. And I think he has a target price of like £34 million. I think they go for him if they can't get Elise. But I think they get two center backs. I think they get a midfielder. And I think they get a striker. Anything outside of that, I think is dependent on sales.
I mean, I think you can lowball Braithwaite. Dude's worth like $300 million because of his companies. So like, he doesn't need the money whatsoever.
Oh, that was ridiculous. They said they wanted £70 million. And then United was like, here's 35. And I think they gave like $8 million in add-ons. And Everton was like, no. It's like, well, if you're going to be ridiculous, like, why are we talking? And supposedly tonight, they said that they'll put in another offer, and it's take it or leave it. It's the final offer. If you don't want it, we'll move on to other targets. Which, you know, is like Guehi, or I don't think Yoro's going to United. I think he's going to Real Madrid. But the point is there's other targets. So if Everton are stupid, then they will miss out, you know. So it's up to them whether they want the money or not. Like I said, I think they get two center backs. I think they get a midfielder. And that's the funny thing. Outside of Neves, we haven't been really linked to another midfielder. Like, concretely linked to another midfielder. So I think they want Neves really bad, and I'll be curious to see if they can somehow get him out of Benfica. And if you're going to overpay on a player, I would overpay on him. You know, I think, you know, Ten Hag has saved you a lot of money, you know, doing what he did with Kobbie Mainoo. I think if you're going to spend over the odds, you'd spend it on him. Striker-wise, haven't really been linked to anyone concretely. Sesko's staying. And even if he wasn't, I don't think they would have gotten him. I think he would have went to Arsenal or Chelsea. They have a clear need. You know, he'd be competing with Hoyland, which I think would also be stupid unless you're planning to play two strikers consistently.
Same profile like we were talking about before.
Yeah. You
know, they're essentially the same body.
And Ivan Toney, he likes Spurs. Spurs like him. I think Spurs put in a bid. I think it got rejected. I think it was a £40 million bid. It got rejected. I wouldn't pay more than $40 million for Toney. He's like 29.
Remember when he was $100 million?
Yeah.
Before his return.
Well, and he his gambling problems too.
Yeah, before his return from gambling.
Hey, alleged.
You're right. If we're talking about it, but Sean, you had something to say. I want to make sure that you get that one out there.
Yeah. So I mean, quickly to your point, I think it kind of will be an example versus just the talk. You know, Manchester United walking the walk regarding being better from a business standpoint if they just simply move on from Branthwaite and go to their next option instead of spending, you know, if they have, you know, $50 million allotted to spend for a center back, that's what they spend instead of doing what they have done, where it's either an arduous drawn out process where they either don't get the guy or they end up getting him in a different window or for exorbitant amount of money. Examples of that, I think the two that come to mind from overspending were Antony and then Sancho, you know, obviously coming in a later window. And then you think about like Gravenberch and Gakpo, who ended up going to Liverpool. They were linked to United for 6 months each before Liverpool ever even picked up the phone.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up some bad memories. I really appreciate that. I'm shocked that you didn't say Harry Maguire. I guess that one has aged better. He had a good season. He just doesn't fit the profile of what United want to play. They want to play a high line. Harry Maguire cannot play a high line. I agree. Antony was an overspend. Sancho, he was highly rated. I think now you can say they overpaid for him. But if he lived up to his expectations, I think it would have been like, all right, it was a fine bit of business.
A wash.
Yeah, it was a wash. It took 2 years. Yeah. Well, this is United after all. Well, that's a difference. We talked about, you know, the fans wanting to keep Ten Hag. And I think it was purely that we don't want to see another manager sacked. We want to see some of the players moved on. And I think in terms of transfers, you see the same thing. Fans, you know, before we're like, we want Paul Pogba, whatever it takes. We want Sancho, whatever it takes. Just get it done. Where now I've seen a lot of people say, you know, if Everton wants stupid money, you know, flick them off and move on. There's other players to get, and you know, it's more important to get these players in at a reasonable price than it is to wait all summer to get these players in and integrated into the team. I think it's important.
You have to build a roster. You have to build a team. I mean, perfect example is you go to PSG, bought Mbappe, bought Messi, bought Neymar, throwing, and they had endless funds. It didn't get them anything. And then Mbappe leaves for free, and they have no game plan on bringing up an actual. Manchester United has the culture where they can actually establish growth within the league, within the company, and actually, you know, develop the building blocks for a sustainable. I think everyone forgets that a soccer team or a football team is a business, and it needs to have some type of sustainable goal. It's just not an endless vat, like, oh, this guy's hot right now, let's fucking throw it at him. It's like the market. You buy the stock that's really hot, you bought it too late, you got to get it before it gets there. You know, and I think that's the approach that Manchester United has avoided for quite some time. But the way that you're talking about the transfers, bringing in the younger guys, I think is the right direction. I think you're spot on that.
Well, I think too, you know, like we said, Ten Hag's ability to bring through the youth. There was an article, I think, a couple weeks ago where the academy players, and not that their opinion really matters too much, but they're much happier that they have a clear path to the first team. You know, at the end of the season last year, they had that image of Ten Hag with Kobe Mainoo. And I'm not saying every player is going to be Kobe Mainoo, but he had that same interaction with Collier at the end of the FA Cup. So if Collier can make his way up to the first team, well, then maybe you can get away with just bringing in one midfielder, like a Yao Neves. You don't need two. You can make do with one. Like the left back, that Harry Amass, very high potential. I don't know. He made it on the bench a couple times this season, didn't make it onto the field. But, you know, his ability to get these players from the academy onto the pitch is a huge deal. And I think, you know, like we were saying, that helps in the transfer market. You don't need to buy as many players. You can bring them through the academy. And then when you do buy players, you can maybe spend a little more. You know, like I'm not going to lose my mind if they spend, you know, 50 versus 55 on Branthwaite. I don't care. But it's the Harry Maguire where you sign him for £80 million on a 7-year contract and give him £190,000 a week, where it's like, darn, what are we going to do if this doesn't work out? And unfortunately, that's where we've been too many times, is it hasn't worked out. And then you're kind of stuck with these guys.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of promise, I think, with the academy. It also just depends on where your team is currently at. If you have the opportunity to show a little bit more showcase, like Liverpool towards the end of, or the middle to the end of the season, they had their injuries. So they were able to bring a little bit more of the academy, the youth, to fill those voids. And it turns out that works. But a lot of the teams where, when you're past that point where you don't need the bodies, where you have done the work, you've brought in people from other leagues that are supposed to jumpstart into your team, you don't really have the luxury of bringing in academy players. You look at a team like Arsenal now, very little youth development. The last one we had was Saka, and now we are looking to sell Emile Smith Rowe just because we have higher players in that position already, like Udegaard, we brought in Trossard, we brought in Declan Rice. Like those roles, those key roles get filled now with the appeal of teams such as Manchester City, such as Arsenal, such as sometimes Chelsea, where it kind of fills that void and then you can sell on profit. But I think overall, Manchester United, I think, will start off next season at a much lower expectation grade or ranking for me, and hopefully increase for your health and your sanity, Brendan. I wanted to give an opportunity to get any final thoughts and feelings from the rest of the crew here before we move on to the next segment, which is a quick one that we're going to do here, which is just goes over Copa and the Euros. But before we do a sign off, Sean, you have any last second thoughts or questions or anything like that? And then Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, the only one I really got is if Ten Hag didn't win the FA Cup over Pep, gotta bring up Pep, but if he didn't win the FA Cup, do you think he'd still be around? Or would you even want him around if he had, you know, a failure of a season, worst season ever, no silverware?
If he didn't win, I think he would have gotten the sack, but I would have wanted him to stay. I don't think the season is entirely his fault. I think he has some blame, but I don't think he has the majority of blame.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, you said it earlier, 45 plus injuries is, you can't prepare for that. You just physically can't do it. I don't care who you are, what team you are. So kudos to him. All right.
The only teams. Yeah, the only teams that had lost more games or lost more players to injury in terms of, you know, games missed, all finished ahead of Manchester United, by the way. It was Newcastle, Chelsea, and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Well, those are just good teams, you know.
All right, but this is, I mean, we're talking about them eventually taking the step to be a good team. My last thing is just year three, what's your expectation? What's a B season in year three of Erik ten Hag?
I don't know about a B season, but an A season, you have to finish top four and you have to win another trophy. Yeah, I think that's the progression. But I also think that's dependent on him being backed in the transfer window, getting those players in early. You know, like I said, he has some blame. Some of it is not his fault. I mean, he had so much drama in the 2 years he's been here, the amount of stuff he had to deal with, and he's handled most of it pretty well. But, you know, everyone
publicly. Yeah. Everyone forgets that he came in and solved the Ronaldo issue. And then immediately after that was the Jordan Sancho issue. And then immediately after that, we just renewed a Marcus Rashford issue. So it's not like he's had, you know, the Cabbage Patch Kids to work with.
Yeah. And he's dealt with the sale of the club, you know, almost the entirety. So I think, you know, for it to be a successful season, he needs top four. And if he doesn't finish top four, I think there are some questions to be asked.
All right. Well, beautiful, man. So we're going to take a quick pause here. Brendan, listen, as always, we appreciate it. And when we get to give our, you know, listeners an opportunity to listen about a team other than Liverpool, Arsenal, or Manchester City in depth, it's always greatly appreciated. We will definitely bring you on towards the beginning of next season as well, because I think that the first month is going to be a critical make or break part of the season for Erik ten Hag, just between him and his fans. The program might be fully bought into by Manchester United, but I think his relationship with the fans are going to be massive in order to persuade them into continuing the process and the program within that first month. So hopefully we get you back on a positive note. But until then, I appreciate it. You're welcome to stick around, obviously, and give your 2 cents. But we're going to take a quick pause, listen to some groovy music, and then talk about the Euros and Copa.
Well, I appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully we'll be on a better terms at the beginning of next season. I'll put it that way.
one could hope. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. All right, well, we were domestic and now we're going international. This is the part where we typically do the weekend round off or rapid kick. So we're going to stick with it and we're going to talk about the Euros and Copa America. So the first round of the Euros is coming to a conclusion tomorrow with the big showcase game at 3 p.m. with a potential title contender as Portugal versus Czech Republic at 3. But before we get to that, let's talk about quickly the games that we have seen and the excitement that they have brought to us so far. For me, the biggest highlights from round one, obviously pending tomorrow's match, would be Germany. They look serious, and the host got off to a flying start with the largest win of round one with a 5-1 W against a 10-man-sided Scotland and opened up a lot of people's eyes, I think, for the sleeping giant that we didn't really think was going to do too much until we saw their lineup and saw, wow, wait, actually, individually, these guys look pretty good. The team that I would keep an eye out for and had the most impressive win of round one, in my opinion, and it's considering their current age of their squad and the lack of experience at major tournaments that this squad currently has, is Spain. They easily beat recent world superpower and World Cup finalists a few World Cups ago, Croatia, in a pretty dominating force. They didn't have their possession like they typically do have Spain, but didn't really allow Croatia to take any real clinical chances or big chances and perform extremely well from the front all the way to the top. So big shout out for Spain. I watched that game with Juan and Evaristo in Little Spain in the city, and it was an exciting game to watch with my compadres, mi hombres, mi amigos for the day. So with that being said, we had a couple on the other side of the spectrum, not as exciting and some disappointing features. Sean, you want to take us through that?
Absolutely. So the two favorites from a betting standpoint coming into the tournament were England and France. By far probably the two of the more disappointing teams, just in terms of performance, squeaking out 1-0 victories. Today, France beat Austria 1-0 thanks to an own goal in the first half and Mbappe's nose smashed into about 150 different pieces. So just not great start for France. England looked a little bit discombobulated. I imagine there probably will be some changes in that lineup. I think Adam Wharton from Crystal Palace is the guy who's best suited to balance that midfield. I'm sure Brendan will tell me I'm an idiot for disrespecting the golden child that is Kobbie Mainoo. I think he's somehow passed Bukayo Saka as the world-renowned, universal, can't-hate-him guy.
Definitely in the media. Sure. I mean, he's getting the stick now, not Saka. He's a new whipping boy.
That's it. Although, like, if anything goes bad, they plaster Saka's face on a newspaper.
Whoa. But that's they do. All right. They do. But, I mean, we also have to touch upon Italy winning their first game, defending champions. I mean, Forza Italia.
After conceding the tournament's fastest goal, may I add.
They were just looking out for the boys who needed to bet but forgot. So, you know, you bet 7 minutes in, odds are better. Classic Italy.
Well, they killed my four-leg parlay within 35 seconds, so they were not looking out for the boys who needed to bet.
So you bet against the defending champions on something?
No, I bet with them.
Oh, you bet with them. What was the
give up a goal. I had a parlay with 0 goals scored for Albania.
Albania? Dude, they're nasty. They're filthy.
No, get out of town. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Name one Albanian person ever.
Yolanda Gasparo.
Name one Albanian person right now in history.
My Italian teacher in high school. She was Albanian. Who? 100%. And Croatian.
Okay. That's right.
There's one.
You don't even know. You might. You know someone from the Balkan region.
Albania.
That's what
I
we
mean,
got.
I just know she said she was Albanian. That's it.
You could have gone with Roja, who we've talked about a few times. But anyway, we digress. Sean, we're going to talk about Belgium a little bit here. Do you think anyone is actually going to think Lukaku is a good striker again, or should he just give up on soccer for the remainder of his life?
Yeah, well, the thing with him is it comes in waves where just when you think he's like the worst player on the planet, he then bounces back and has like a 15 goal season or has an unbelievable tournament where he makes a bunch of unselfish plays. So I don't know, man. I don't know what to say about Romelu Lukaku at this point. He is the definition of an enigma. But yeah, Belgium just is consistently disappointing. It's like, I don't know. It's like when you wake up to a glass of water, what you think is a glass of water on the side of the table, it's actually a cup of vodka, just bitterly disappointing. That is Belgium in every major tournament.
I thought you were going to say, like, you think it's a full glass of water, but you realize you drank it all the night before, so now it's an empty glass of water, and you have no water, and that's Belgium. But the vodka comparison is way, way significantly worse.
But dude, Lukaku is awesome. I mean, he is single-handedly responsible for City winning the Champions League last year. We take that.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, they did loot Belgium to rub some more salt in their wounds. They became the tournament's largest FIFA rating upset in the history of the Euro. Belgium is ranked FIFA rating number 3, and Slovakia is 48. So that's a tough L to carry. Kevin De Bruyne, also part of a Man City squad that is facing 115 charges.
He
but we won't talk about that.
He didn't play.
He played.
No.
Anyway, bringing it back to our local grounds, Copa America. Sean, I know you're going to it relatively soon in Atlanta. So why don't you kind of tell us how we're going to start this weekend?
Yes. So I will be in attendance when the defending champions of Copa America, Argentina, open the tournament at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta against Canada on Thursday night. The U.S. kicks things off later. They're actually are the last group to start Group C against Bolivia on Sunday night. It's only our third time since 2016 facing off against the Bolivians. We've only won 2 of our last 8. However, as you noted here on the sheet, those were 7-0 wins on aggregate. This is a very up and down United States men's national team. It's really hard to predict what they're going to do on a game to game basis. And that was kind of evident in their warm-up games, getting absolutely blown away by Colombia and then drawing with Brazil. So I don't know what else to say with them at this point. Two guys I just want to keep an eye on or mention going into this tournament, I think in really good form, is Haji Wright from Coventry. We talked about him in the FA Cup run that they had to the semifinal. Thought he was really good. be interesting to see if he comes in as a left winger or if he's used more as a traditional striker, which is where he played in the past for the USMNT, but had his most successful season playing on the left wing. And then the other guy I wanted to mention was Mark McKenzie from Genk. He missed out on the World Cup squad last year due to injury, but he's a really talented young player, center back, probably could pair well with Chris Richards from Crystal Palace. So those two should be an interesting duo together. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting barometer for the USMNT going into 2026 when we'll host the World Cup. Where are we at? You know, we stack up. There's some of the best teams in the world, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, obviously the favorites, but there's some really strong teams in this competition. And I think at a minimum, we should be, you know, getting through the group stage and hopefully into the quarterfinals of this tournament.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the only way for this team is up with the talent that we've had, and especially with that bright 1-1 draw against Brazil and their starting 11. Don't know if you guys saw it, was a superb starting 11 Brazil, and we made them look like they weren't on the pitch. In my opinion, that's a little biased from a United States men national team fan, but promising. If they can show up like that every single week, we can build out of the back with the best of them. But until then, we won't know. So again, Sunday night, so make sure you're watching that. Other than that, that wraps up the episode for this week. We'll either pop on next week or the following, depending on our schedules, but we will be back at it again before you know it. So again, thank you for listening. Brendan, again, thank you for joining us, and I hope you all enjoyed our spotlight with Manchester United today. Until then, we'll talk to you later.